And hello, good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly, and this is something new. Well, it may be something new. I've yet to decide whether it'll happen or not. What I've thought about doing is doing kind of daily vlogs, which I used to do all those years ago when I started wanting to learn how to do video creation. But the problem with doing daily vlogs is that it takes so much time. Like, it takes hours and hours and hours to do, particularly if you're doing anything other than just a talking head. You know, with colour correcting, editing, fixing the audio, rendering, uploading, thumbnails, all of those things. So if I am going to do a kind of daily vlogging type stuff, I'm not going to be doing any of that because I just don't have time to do any of that, or the inclination or the need or the want or any of those things. And I also want to keep it quite short, so less than, you know, 5 minutes, so it's not a big piece, whatever. And it mightn't even have to be 5 minutes, just some sort of touching in every day, like a daily diary, rather than the other videos or podcasts that I've done, which are a bit more in-depth, a bit more kind of, I was going to say a bit kind of more thought out, but they're seldom more thought out, like kind of go with them, run with them, as you may have noticed. So if it is possible to do it on a very limited amount of effort, in a way that you're just basically recording by using your phone, you know, holding it somewhere, like not setting up tripods, any of these things, so I could do it when I'm out from the office, when I'm away, that, you know, because I always have my phone on me, so it's never an excuse that I don't have the camera or anything. Then I think it's possible. But what I've set myself a challenge of doing is doing it for a week and see how I feel after a week. And if after a week I still want to do it, then I will upload the videos. And it also means I have a buffer of a week, possibly. Or I might just upload them in one go. We will see how it goes. So if you actually get to see these videos, then there's a chance that I will be continuing this daily kind of vlog. Maybe I'll just do it on Patreon. I don't know what I'm thinking at the minute, other than I just want to get it done and get it started and see how it feels. So let's see what happens. So in keeping with my whole idea of trying to keep these videos as simple as possible with the least amount of setup that I can get away with, here is an IKEA reading lamp with a diffuser on it. So there's some sort of professionality towards, you know, not every reading lamp that people have from IKEA has a diffuser on it. It's just a lump, I was going to say. It's a piece of material that sits over a light that hopefully doesn't go on fire, but in some way makes the light better. I don't know. Anyway. What I wanted to talk about in this one briefly is a kind of a tip that I got, or a technique, if you want, or something I got from years ago on a Udemy course, of all places, where it was some sort of course of doing maybe about persuasion or about, I don't know, confidence building or some sort of maybe marketing thing. I don't know what it was doing. I've any number of Udemy courses that I mostly finished, to be fair, but some I don't. And some of the free ones, you just kind of look in. Anyway. Before we go off on that Udemy tangent. So what it is basically how to have a better kind of interaction with people in general. And I found it extremely useful on the internet with dealing with people, particularly people I don't really know. So like say people leaving comments on YouTube videos or on blog posts and stuff like that. But I've also found it handy in email exchanges with people I know. Like it's not just strangers or random people off the internet. And the whole idea is to not make people wrong unless you really have to. And in a sense, what that means is that, say I have put up a post and it's about how to do magic with the four devils, as I have made a post about this, but it's just it's just an example. And then someone leaves a comment asking a question that is answered in the actual blog post that I've written or the video I've done or whatever it is. Now, rather than going, as I said in the video, or as I wrote in the third paragraph above, I just answered the question. Just answer the question. There is no need to make that person wrong or make them feel bad. No one is under any obligation to, actually read your stuff, watch your videos or any of these type of things. And some people just miss them. I know I've often read through text or whatever and just missed some key piece. And when you're in a rush and you're doing plenty of things, you're you know, you can sometimes miss these things, and it's, you know, it's just human nature and stuff. And sometimes people are asking questions as well, just to have some sort of interaction, you know, and it's not, you know, they mightn't necessarily really care about the answer, that, you know, which you have to think about as well. And they just want to kind of in some way interact with you or, you know, have some sort of social interaction. And I don't mean that just because I'm a guy off YouTube or whatever. But I mean, you can have that at work or, you know, and like, or someone just trying to show an interest in what you're doing or something like that. Maybe your mom, your sister, something like that. You know, I'm just doing that. So this idea of making them wrong by going, well, I actually covered that in a video. I found when you don't do that, they'll go away happy, you go away happy because you don't feel like an ass for doing something like that, or you don't feel, you know, like you're morally superior to people or whatever. And everyone kind of just wins in that. And there's absolutely no need for it. And I know if I have been sent an email and it says, as I said in the last email, blah, 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 it just drives me insane. And I hate the person who sent it to me immediately. And there's no need for it. Like, they could just answer the question. It takes as many words to just, you know, re-copy-paste the link or, you know, just re-say what you have said as it does to chastise the person for asking, you know, a seemingly already answered question. So since I've been doing that, I found that a lot of my kind of online annoyances have gone away, in that if people ask me a question, there's no kind of thing of, God, I didn't look at the video, why you'd ask? Just answer the question. Just answer it. And they get the answer they want. You come off as being a nice guy or a nice girl, or for, you know, just being friendly and being a decent human being, and everyone wins. So don't make people wrong unless you really have to, unless they're really being an ass. And even then, I would be with Stuart Wilde on the to kill them with kindness, or, you know, softly, softly. Always return aggression with kindness or softness or whatever. That doesn't mean like acquiesce to people's bullshit or, you know, just give in to people. You know, you get stand your ground, whatever, but you don't have to be nasty and you don't have to return the thing that has been sent at you. And I've done that particularly on Reddit. I'm very nice to people who've sent me, because Reddit's like full of people who hate everyone more than most places, but it's still my favourite social media. Well, actually, Discord is probably my favourite social media. And so if, you know, something is particularly nasty in Reddit because it's anonymous and that kind of thing, that if you just return it with kindness, you know, the next thing seems to be that they've returned with kindness. And it just, you know, it's all this kind of beautiful hippie shit that we all should do. So that's just my thought for today, that if someone asks you a question on something you've done, be that a work thing, a family thing or something, and rather than saying something like, as I said in the last email, or as I said in the video, as I said in the, you know, whatever, the previous phone call, just answer it. Just answer whatever it is they're asking, even if it is repeating yourself. And what happens is everyone walks away feeling great. So until tomorrow, enjoy. Over the last couple of days, I've been thinking a lot about Dave Sim. And Dave Sim, for those who don't know, is the guy behind Cerebus, which was one of the most successful independent comics of all time. He's a Canadian, and he started Cerebus in 1977 and proceeded then over the next 30-odd years or so to do 300 issues, mostly by himself. Well, when I say mostly by himself, he had that kind of a manga-type system going on where he inked and drew and wrote the characters and did the lettering in that, and he had a guy called Gerhard who did the backgrounds, and wonderful, really massively, gorgeously rendered backgrounds, you know, lots of cross-hatching and all that, just really beautiful artwork. But I kind of got thinking about him yesterday because he was such a huge influence on me at one point that Cerebus, I would say, for many, many years was my favourite comic. And by that I mean the first 200 issues or so. The last 100 issues just didn't grab me at all. But I mean, the first bit, Guys, is pretty good, and then it kind of descends down into madness. It becomes just like a place for Dave Sim to talk about the stuff he wants to talk about, but not in a kind of, he doesn't do a true character, he just kind of does it very blatantly and obviously that it's him talking. He's even in the book, in Cerebus, towards the end. I think it's in Reeds where he comes in as a character and talks to Cerebus as his creator, who's called Dave, which is obviously Dave Sim. But what got me thinking about him was that he has a YouTube channel and he does weekly vlogs. And I wasn't aware of it at all. And I just kind of was doing a quick search for Dave Sim on YouTube and I found him. And it got me a wee bit kind of, I suppose, sad in one way, because he's only 1,000 viewers or 1,000 subs. He's been doing this for a long, long, long while. but he has massively fallen out of favour with people. So much so that it seems that when I went to check that his books are out of print, that you can't buy Cerebus anymore. They don't seem to be available. You can buy them digitally. He seems to have remastered them and stuff like that. But actually, just in the general release, like in your Amazon's book depositories, they're not there. And the reason why he kind of fell out of favour was that he got himself labelled as a misogynist. And mostly through his kind of anti-feminist kind of rants, I suppose. And he has one blog post, which is 15 unbelievable things that you have to believe before breakfast, which is basically his manifesto towards why feminism sucks. Now, whatever is your kind of thoughts around these things, that's not kind of the debate on that, because people have been debating him forever about this. And, you know, there's both sides of this kind of whole thing. Well, depending on what way you want to look at it, there's both sides of things. But what I'm just saying is, I'm not kind of, in the same way that when I had that kind of interest in Jordan Peterson and people would talk about his kind of his politics, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. The Dave Sim, well, I suppose I do care about it. Like, I mean, it's kind of the dismiss saying I don't care about people's feelings that have been hurt and that kind of stuff, and that people, I don't care about the issues. I do care about the issues. What I mean in that kind of sense when I say that about people like Jordan Peterson or about this, and that's not why I'm interested in them. And so, I mean, to have their, so the things that I find interesting about them and the things that I don't, and the things I don't find interesting about them, I don't care about them in regards to them as my interest in them. Not that I don't care when people say shitty things or that. But I've talked before, or saying it's very hard to kind of separate the, you know, the art from the artist and stuff like this. But Dave Sim in this thing certainly has destroyed his career by what he has said. And the kind of reaction that people had to him, to the point where he kind of, he's almost working for no reason. Like, he has a video up going, why do I keep doing this? And it's like kind of going, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to do bad art to be tried to be popular? Am I going to not say the things that I believe to be true so that people will like me again? Or will I just keep doing the things that seem right to me? And then hopefully at some stage in the future, people will look back and say that, you know, that, oh, maybe Dave Sim was, you know, hard done by or whatever. And I think he does have a sense that the future and history will look more kindly on him than modernity does right now, or contemporary times. But it's kind of sad that someone who was such an influence and someone who was such a big part of my life, and I have a really lovely memory of when I met my wife. I was in the process of buying all the single issues of Cerebus because it was at a stage in my life where I was finally able to like start being able to afford to do things like this. And we would have many days where we bid on them on eBay and stuff. And this was back in the day when eBay was like cool. And so I have a lot of kind of memories around Cerebus and going to shops and going to comic shops with my wife in the early days. I'm sure she thought it was fantastic to be dragged around all these comic shops trying to buy Canadian black and white comics from the 70s and 80s. But she, you know, she indulged me, and it went well, and she still likes me, I assume. So it's just kind of looking at it, because when I'm doing my new comic and stuff, there is definitely elements of Cerebus, the art style and the approach and the rendering and stuff that I, you know, I want to bring with me, and I want to bring as a facet of the comic that I'm doing. And just delving into kind of Dave Sim's world now to see that he's kind of, like, the whole thing about Cerebus is that he, like, the prediction that the judge on the moon says to him in the middle of the comic, spoilers, is that he tells him that you will die alone, unmourned and unloved. And it seems like in my recent kind of video about hypersigils, where I'm talking about the fiction echoing real life, it seems to be that it's a thing that the hypersigilness of the Cerebus comic seems to be coming true, where that he had this rise to fame, this huge Dave Sim rise to fame, as Cerebus does, becomes the Prime Minister or the Pope, etc. And then there's this huge dive in which the last 100 issues or so is just basically Dave Sim's manifesto, and where everyone kind of falls away from him or whatever, which happened in the fiction and happened in his real life, where it seems likely at the moment that he's in some form going to die alone, unloved and unmourned, which is an interesting kind of thing. Like, and that makes me a bit sad, but it's also, like, you can see the magic of it. You can see if you're going to do your life's work around these things, there's going to be some sort of bleacher, I believe. Anyway, so it's an interesting thing, and I don't know how I feel about it. Like I said, like, there's that manifesto of that his 15 things you have to believe. There's some of it that you can kind of go, well, I understand where you're kind of coming. Some of it where I just go, no, I'm not, that seems bitter and for want of a better word, you know, it doesn't feel anti-feminist as it feels kind of anti-women, or feels like there's a kind of a lot of hatred towards women or something. But he protests that immensely and says that, you know, that it's not the case, that he loves women, all of these type of things. A lot of his characters in his book seems to be a case that they seem to want to blame all of their life's misery on women, rather than, you know, any kind of a thing that they've done themselves, or your part to play in it as well. So anyway, like I said, that's not really the misogyny element of Dave Sim that I wanted to think, more that how the art and his career echoed in his art, and how it's kind of ended up in a sad place. But yet he seems somewhat hopeful about it all, in that he will be vindicated in the end, and that history, as I say, will look more favourably upon him than they do now. But I would say, if you can get past the politics of it, and you can get past the kind of rhetoric and hatred and all of these things, and actually just read the stuff, some of it, you know, it's obvious, as I say, it's echoed in the book, so the storyline, so it's hard to totally avoid it. But the first 200 issues of Cerebus are wonderful. And you will have a different appreciation, perhaps, of the last 100 issues. I have a friend who loves the last 100 issues and thinks it's wonderful. And some of the best work done in comics. So it could, you know, while I'm on the side of, you know, most people feel the last 100 issues are less good than the first 200, you may feel different. And it does point out in the book itself, in the thing, within the 6,000 pages, that the story really does end on issue 200. But anyway, that's what I just wanted to say. Dave Sim, wonderful artist, really good writer, come up with a wonderful character, all a success. And sometimes when you write fiction and you make your main character go through some hardships and you really incorporate yourself into it, when you have all the aspects of a hypersigil, you have to be careful that you don't end up making a hypersigil unbeknownst to yourself. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say. Welcome to another of these short, sharp shock videos. It's interesting, it's only day 4, I think, that I've been doing this. And already last night I was spending some time going, oh, how will I do better thumbnails? How will I work on this? You know, maybe I will use the other camera. I'm going, stop it. Stop all of these things. You're going to end up doing videos that will just take hours and hours and hours and defeat the entire purpose. But I did, in my search, find out how to make thumbnails on my phone and really simply and stuff like that. Not that thumbnails are ever hard to make, but that the idea is that I want it just to be snap, 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 done and edited away, so that it's not a case of that it's a big drama or take a big load of time to do these videos. But anyway, so we are in lockdown pretty much here in Ireland at the time of recording for the coronavirus, COVID-19 type thing that's going on. And over the weekend, it seems to have got an awful lot more serious years than it was, or at least people are taking it a wee bit more serious, although there is footage or photos or at least talk of a hazmat party that was going on in some pub in Dublin over the weekend, which is so blatantly and typically Ireland, it's unbelievable. So you know, well, you know, following the rules, we're still going to the pub. But yeah, just over the last while, it's just people have been kind of just, you know, there has been the panic buying, all the pasta was gone. We didn't quite have fist fights over toilet roll, or at least Spud was telling me that there was some fist fights, but that it was kind of hushed up to normalise that type of activity. But in general, it was just kind of okay. There was the whole kind of lockdown, schools are gone, it looks like an awful lot of businesses are going to be closed, people are told to not go to work, all of this type of stuff. So it's kind of interesting, and it's a bit kind of, in one way, scary, but I'm not scared in the sense of dying or it being the end of the world, but it's kind of scary of being locked in, or, you know, having less freedom or the lack of control. But it's mostly, it's disturbance and the whole idea of not being able to do what I want, or, you know, and the inconvenience. The possible inconvenience that is on my mind. But like, it really, in theory, shouldn't affect my life at all, in that I spend 90% of my time in this place, which is, you know, a quarantine zone already, you know, a deliberate place where, for the most part, only I am allowed to enter. So that's not really going to change. But I suppose it's just it's outside things, and it's like if you want to go for a walk, you can't now, which was, you know, that's very restrictive, and particularly when you have a young boy who likes to go outside and do that. But it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days. I did kind of have the notion, go, oh, isn't it interesting that I start doing this daily diary 4 days, 5 days, whatever it is, 3 days before, you know, the lockdown and all this kind of thing. It's like the beginning of a horror film. And I went, oh, let's not make a hyper sigil out of the coronavirus and daily diaries. But there's another part of me in the whole kind of, if you've been following the stuff I've been doing with Spud on the Tommy and Spud Talk About, where we talk a lot about reality transurfing and this whole idea of pendulums. And of course, the coronavirus thing is like a very big example of a pendulum. And one of the things that has been told to do to get away from pendulums is to ignore them. Now, it's not a kind of a ignoring in the sense of you pretend you're ignoring it. You actually don't pay it any attention. It's not, you know, it's not this kind of a subduing or so. As an example would be like someone who knows that they've got something wrong with them, like they've a sickness, whatever, but they pretend they don't and they don't go to the doctor and all that. It's not ignoring it in that kind of way in the hope that, you know, it just goes away, because you're constantly probably thinking about that. It's, you know, you're thinking about the thing, oh, I must forget to think about this and not go to the doctor and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the actual ignoring is that you don't put any energy into it. Now, of course, that's all well and good for an awful lot of things, but when there's something so big and so prevalent as this kind of pandemic, it's not so easy to ignore, because even how much of my life I have filtered from the news and from, you know, media in general, it still obviously comes true. But what happened, I think, to me was that because I wasn't paying attention, it seemed to have switched from a mild kind of background hum to a huge thing very quickly. But it probably didn't. It was probably building up for a long while. It's just I kind of, my interaction with people was fine. And then, you know, it was like, put yourself in the houses, the zombies are coming. But yeah, it's interesting. And I do think ignoring it and it going away is good for some things. But I do think that you should probably engage with some of the bigger stuff as well. Because as Mitch Horowitz always points out, says that, you know, while your thoughts and, you know, law of attraction and your mental powers or, you know, thoughts become things, all these things are probably a reality and all that. And you can definitely, even from a reductionist materialist point of view, can kind of point that when you concentrate on something, you get more of it, or at least it appears you get more of it, in that when you want a particular car, you start seeing more of that car about because your brain attunes to it. So even in a very non-woo thing, thoughts become things. But as Mitch Horowitz points out, that there's more than just that going on. It's not just your thoughts. It's everyone's thoughts. It's bigger things. And in the reality transurfing, it's the bigger pendulums too as well that are at play. So while you can ignore these things and all that, you probably still should, you know, follow the kind of rules that have been laid out by the health officials of your country and stuff, even if it does turn out to be nothing. And hopefully it does, because I do believe that this is a good thing to do, because, like, what's the worst that can happen? People get inconvenienced for a while, rather than 50 million people died, as they did in 1918 for the Spanish flu and all that. And we can come into any amount of conspiracy around it, and it's great entertainment and that's all fun and all that. But why not err on the side of caution, particularly when we're in a climate of denying certain kind of climate changes and stuff like that, where we don't seem to want to take any action on, you know, on many kind of political levels and stuff like that. So it's great to see that we can rally the troops behind, you know, let's not all die type of scenarios. So that's good. And also you get to feel like you're part of a zombie movie or a doomsday movie, or, you know, whatever's the real threat. It's like, oh, the flu is coming, you know, that's not really the, you know, the Black Plague is coming. Although, you know, as I said, this might be turned into like a horror film. These are the diaries. These are the found footage of Tommy Kelly and the last days of the planet as the wizard is slowly devoured by the flu-like zombies. So anyway, quarantine, self-quarantine is going to be good for me in that it's not really that much inconvenience and it's something I enjoy anyway. But we'll see how it goes. Not sure how the climate will look, or the you know, the world will look wide by the time these comes out, because they'll be staggered a bit. But yeah, let's see how it goes. And a future Tommy, if you're surrounded by zombies, good luck with that. I hope that all works out for you. So be well. And hello, good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly, and this is Adventures in WooWoo. And as you may have noticed over the last couple of days, I forgot to use my trademark opening. I'm not sure why. I think I was trying to differentiate these videos maybe from the other videos or something. I don't know. Maybe I just forgot. But such is life. I will continue to use it from here on in, unless I come up with something more interesting, which I doubt I will. These are things that are only I would worry about. Other people don't. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about today was this whole idea of inserting your magic, or doing some magic right now, in a time of strife and wild chaos, because I think it's a very fertile type of time to do that. So while the kind of the hands of Eris are slowly going around the world and the place is shutting down and people are going into quarantine and, you know, the whole routine has been upset and all our kind of day-to-day things are in a very, very much in a state of flux. And now I think would be a very, very fertile time to do some magic. So now would be a great time to do some sigils, to, you know, start on your hyper sigil, to do some of your maybe ceremonial stuff if that's what you're into. But definitely this kind of idea of injecting some of your will into the matrix while Eris is so prevalent in the land. And the whole thing of chaos is, you know, so that it's for movement and it's taking out the old and making new things as well. You know, it's not just destruction for the sake of destruction or anarchy for the sake of anarchy. It's about taking these stuff and doing something, you know, blowing it out so that new stuff can come in. So chaos, while in a sense is hard sometimes to go through, it ultimately is usually a good thing. So we should take this type of period and try and see the pendulum of it, if you want to look at it in reality, transurfing things, and use it to our advantage. Now, Phantom Zealand in reality transurfing would say that all pendulums are bad or negative in the sense of that you end up being an adherence to it, so you give away some of your energy. So while it's impossible, like I said before, to probably get away from something as big as a pendulum of the, you know, the world shutting down, essentially, I suppose in this case it would be, you know, a good idea to kind of make something positive out of it. So with that in mind, I was thinking, well, this kind of similar in a sense to the Dead Days, which happens after Christmas. So from St. Stephen's Day, as we call it in Ireland, rightfully so, Boxing Day is also available, to New Year's Eve, is this idea of the Dead Days, which, you know, the world is kind of shut down, it's slowed down, routine is completely changed, whatever, and it's a good day to kind of, you know, inject a bit of, I suppose, enchantment into the world. But while we have that, while it's similar to what's going on now in that it's, you know, like the, everything has lowered down and things have changed, there is this element of chaos, which is not the thing that's usually about in the Dead Days time. So if you're a Discordian or if you're a Chaos Magic, you know, if you're into Chaos Magic, then the whole idea of chaos is what we deal with here. But I suppose we have this kind of idea that chaos can always mean bad things, and it can do, of course, you know, because like the whole idea of Kali is the destroyer, the destructor, but also, you know, the rebuilder too. So try some sigils now, try doing some magic and see what happens. See if it's more potent, if it's more fertile than it is at any other times, and try and inject a bit more enchantment into the world right now, and possibly, you know, so for some world healing or, you know, general kind of good luck for things that are going on, whatever is your kind of your idea. Be as selfish as you want to, you know, black magic is as good of a time to do now as white magic, if you delineate things in such a kind of an old-fashioned way. But yeah, so I'm certainly going to be doing some magic while the world falls apart, in the hope that we can usher in some new stuff rather than just dwell on the bad stuff. So, good people of the internet, until next time, be well. And hello, good people of the internet, it is I, Tom Kelly, and this is Adventures in WooWoo. And as you can see by the quality of this video, I have succumbed to the temptation of setting up the DSLR to do these videos. Now, in my own defense, I probably knew it was coming, but also I still have it that the DSLR still records, you know, it's all one file. The black and white, the monochrome effect can be added in camera, so I can just literally take the file and upload it to YouTube in the same way as I was doing it on my phone, although I can upload directly from my phone. Whereas if I was using, like, say, the Osmo Pocket or something like that, it splits up the file, you need to render it, you have to correct color, you have to do all of these type of things. So it's still kind of lo-fi, or, you know, it's low maintenance rather than lo-fi, but has kind of upped the quality a bit. But I'll see.
I will use it for today and maybe anytime I'm in the office, but I will, of course, then be still have the option of using the phone when I'm out and about. But of course, knowing me, this time next week, I will have a six people crew, where I'll have a sound man, a producer, a director, a cameraman, all of these things, just, you know, going from, let's do things on my phone so I can keep it simple to a big production. But of course, I won't be able to do that because we have social distancing now, which means that I'll have to do it all myself. So I'll have to be my own six-man crew. And this is the thing I just want to talk today about. It's a bit more about the kind of pandemic. I know it's kind of everyone's probably a bit sick of it in the whole thing, as I am. But it's kind of what I found today when I got up today. It's that because I got bombarded with a bit of social media very early of people really panicking, really putting the kind of thing on, you know, this is, you know, worst case scenario. You know, everyone you know is going to die. We're not taking this serious enough or whatever. And I have to remember and think that that's kind of not necessarily aimed at me in a sense, because here in Ireland, we are taking it quite seriously. We have closed down most things. We have done this thing. And I suppose it's kind of aimed a bit more at other countries like the UK and the US, which seems to want to ignore it and hope that it goes away. But it's kind of led me to have this kind of background hum of panic or fear or whatever. And it's kind of demotivated me in a sense. And what I've noticed is I've become into a kind of avoidance of things that are personally meaningful to me. But and instead looking for kind of, looking for drama in one sense, you know, looking at anything, but also looking for avoidance and things to kind of preoccupy me or whatever, rather than actually just getting on with my life. Gordon White of Rune Soup has been writing a number of blog posts and emails and newsletters and stuff recently, all about the kind of the coronavirus and the kind of, he has his own ideas around what it's about, where, you know, what's going on, all of these things. But he always ends us with a kind of, you know, just live your life, you know, don't give in to this, you know, keep your coherence together and all that. And I certainly can do that because I'm in a situation where I have my own kind of quarantine space, my office that I built, so I can continue doing the things I am doing. And like that, of course, that's a lot harder to do if you aren't in my situation, which most people aren't. If you can work from home, great. But if you were working in a bar or a restaurant or something that's, you know, now going to be closed or is closed, then you can continue your life in the same way. But it's still, I think you can still do the things, or the aim should be to do, to keep your coherence as much as possible, still keep your plans, even though the future is uncertain. It's kind of anything, it's what we should realize is the future was always uncertain. There was never a point where the future was guaranteed, where, you know, that next week you would still have, you know, a job, or you would still have the job in the same way you have, your life would be in the same way. We just kind of have this vague notion that there is a kind of continuous process that will continue, you know, forever, and that it's, you know, things don't upset that kind of dreamlike thing that we have about the future. That isn't reality, because it is always in flux. Things are always different, and, you know, we can't predict things in that kind of way. And it's really been forcing us to see this, that the future is uncertain. Whereas we kind of only knew that in a kind of a theoretical kind of thing, but we lived in that the future was guaranteed. So I think even now that we've realized that the future is not a guarantee, we can still kind of progress into the future with a bit of hope and a bit of fearlessness and stuff. And what I found is that I've kind of walked back on a few of my projects that I wanted to do, or particularly my comic, whatever, and because there's this kind of background thing of, well, I don't know, is there going to be a world to release this in? Is there going to be, like, should I be putting my effort into something else rather than the things that I want to do? And I think what I found is that that's a bad way to be. I think you should continue doing the things as much as you can that you would do normally if you were under the illusion that your future was secure and going to be as it always was. So, like, do your comics, do your art, you know, to do your courses or do your learning or whatever it is you can in certain different ways. Like, do you keep doing your yoga, keep doing your meditating, you know, do your podcast, do all of these things, maybe augment them and change them to be, you know, more fitting to the times we are currently in. But don't give up on your dreams. Don't give up on your hopes because of an uncertain future, because we never had a certain future. And we seem to be okay with that up until, you know, it's really, you know, someone upset the apple cart, and, you know, it's going, right, we have to have a look at this. And I think ultimately this time, this period could be great for us as human beings, as a society, as a global village, all of these things. I think we can learn an awful lot from it. we're probably only going to learn an awful lot from it if we look for the positive, if we look for the things that we can take from this, learn the lessons and all of this kind of stuff, you know, rather than just give in to the panic, into the fear, into the kind of uncertainty. Kind of embrace the uncertainty with, this is a time of chaos. As magicians, if you're a magician, I assume you are if you're watching this, you know, this is the perfect time. This is chaos. This is when Eris is here. This is when, you know, the magic has come across the land. It's upset everything. Everything is in flux. Everything's up there. Now, let's let things land in the way that we want them. Let's shape that. So I'm going to continue doing my stuff as much as possible. And I implore you that you do it too. Don't give up on your future just because the future has, you know, become very uncertain and very kind of weird and unknown. And we don't know what it is. We could all have died tomorrow anyway. You know, we could all get hit by a bus, as they say, and all of those things. So don't give up on your hopes. Don't give up on your dreams. Continue as much as possible to pursue the things that you want to pursue. And let the future be damned. Let the future look after itself. Learn our lessons and move on. So, on till next time, be well. And hello, good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly, and this is Adventures in Woo-Woo. And in this episode, what I thought I would do is talk a bit about some books that I think people starting off on magic should probably read. And even if you have been on the magic kind of trail for a while, you might have read some of these. I did a video a while back about this, and it's got horrible sound and horrible angle and really bad music in it. But it was quite popular. And so I thought I would do another one. But I didn't watch the other video, so it'll be interesting to see if I recommend the same books. I know a couple of them I definitely haven't. But let's get into this. So, your very first book on magic, I think should give you a good overall kind of sense of what magic is, particularly if you've never, you know, you don't really know what it is and you're kind of trying to work it out. Is it Harry Potter? Is it, you know, New Age? Is it psychological tricks or whatever? And the one I always recommend, the very first book, is Advanced Magic for Beginners by Alan Chapman. And I think it covers an awful lot of stuff. It's definitely a chaos magic book. And it covers an awful lot of ideas, tells you about sigils, tells you about different approaches and about, you know, sympathetic magic. And it did a few ideas. It goes into like 2012 stuff at the end, and there's other stuff in as well that may or may not be dated depending on what way you want to look at it. But I think overall is a good candidate for your first magic book. So next we have The Chaos Protocols by Gordon White, who is, of course, from RuneSoup. And what I was just like, I definitely want to recommend Gordon White to use, but I'm not even sure the Chaos Protocols is the best way to start with him. What I would suggest is going to the runesoup.com, digging into some of his blogs there, or just go straight into the podcast. He definitely, his work on sigils and, you know, on shoaling and the robofish and all that are wonderful ideas. And, you know, definitely they're here to stay and all that. The Chaos Protocols is quite good, as is Pieces of Eight, which has an amazing cover. Whoever drew the cover for Pieces of Eight must be a very handsome chap. Next, I will say Lieber Null by Peter J. Carroll. Now, this comes with caveats. I did a whole study group about this on the Patreon where I read through it and discussed it and stuff like that. And I have any number of opinions about it. I got quite exasperated by it at different times. For a book that purports to get rid of an awful lot of dogma, it inserts an awful lot of dogma as well and has a very kind of, it has its own opinions that it takes seriously and discounts a lot of stuff that maybe shouldn't be discounted. But and even Pete Carroll himself doesn't rate it as the book that it's probably touted as. But it's still, as a first kind of book, it's probably something you should expose yourself to. Lots of the ideas that are still in use are all in it. Just take it all, you know, not again, not as the word of God, just with a grain of salt and have your own kind of view and things and stuff like that. But without this book, chaos magic in itself doesn't exist. Splat. So the next book I'm going to definitely recommend to you all, and this is for new people and people who've been around forever, is John Higgs' KLF book. There you go. Who are the KLF? I don't read a biography of the KLF. This is by far the most magic book I've ever read in my life. And if you like the kind of Grant Morrison disinfo lecture,
or you like listening to him and you get that kind of feel of wanting to do magic or really get into it, this book does exactly the same thing to me. Myself and Spud did a whole podcast about it, so I won't go too much into it. So you can check that out if you want. I'll put the link in the show description. But it's practical magic, fairy chaos magic, fairy Discordian, fairy trying to inject chaos into the world and shape things by doing weird things. It's a wonderful book, and I really couldn't recommend it enough. Next one I'm going to recommend is Reality Transurfing by Vadim Zeeland. Myself and Spud go on about this a lot. I won't drop that quite in the flow because that'll make a lead bag. We talk about this a lot on the podcast, as Spud has become kind of more or less obsessed with it. And he came from like a very much reductionist, materialist, skeptical background, and over the last couple of years, because I've been annoying him, has become a bit more woo. In fact, he's nearly full woo, I would say, at this point. But reality transurfing is kind of, I hate this expression, but we all know it, so we'll do it. It's like the law of attraction on steroids. Forgive me for that. But a lot of the things that annoy me about law of attraction is addressed in this book. There's some very great kind of approaches, different ideas. And it's more than just law of attraction. It's like multiple universes. There's quantum physics thrown in there, which, you know, you should run a mile normally when any kind of spiritual new age person starts talking about quantum physics. But in this case, it seems to work. Highly recommend it. If you're going to get into any kind of thoughts or things or your, you know, belief kind of base kind of stuff like law of attraction or the secret, any of that, this is the one I would recommend. There's so many good ideas. Pendulums alone are just a wonderful idea and have like radically changed my approach and my view and my understanding of life and interactions and all these type of things. Wonderful book. What's your time? From a kind of meditation element of things, there's two books I want to recommend. It's Daniel Ingram's Mastering the Core Teachings of the Buddha, which is a brilliant book. And if you are into meditation in any sense and you want to get deeper into it and want to, you know, kind of have like a roadmap of where meditation leads you, this is brilliant. The other one I want to mention is The Mind Illuminated. I don't know how to pronounce this. Kaladasa, who is John Yates, PhD. And this is a book I read recently, which is very similar to Mastering the Core Teachings of the Buddha by Daniel Ingram, but has taken, in a sense, all of the kind of Buddhist terminology out of it, and has it more in kind of plain language. Very similar, has a couple of different ideas as well. Really, really good. I highly recommend it. Next is two comics. And there's one obvious one and one not so obvious one, I suppose. And this is Injection by Warren Ellis and Declan Shelby and Jordi Belair. I actually know Declan. Oh, well, I used to know Declan. I haven't spoken to him in a number of years, so I don't know at what point that you can still say you know people. This is a fantastic book, and every bit as good, every bit as worthwhile to a magician or a person who has a magic outlook on the world as the obvious next book will be. It's about taking something, an idea, and injecting it into the world. Only in this case, it kind of goes wrong. So it's kind of like the idea of creating a tulpa or a servitor, and the way we have this idea that there is a danger of it going awry and having its own kind of autonomy and sovereignty and wanting to do its own thing rather than the thing that it's programmed or, you know, made to do. And so that's what happens in this, and it's great. And the artwork is brilliant, and you should get it. Now, the obvious one, The Invisibles by Grant Morrison. Not an awful lot more can be said about The Invisibles that hasn't already been said. We did do a book club on it. It's on the YouTube channel. You can check it out if you want to get into it. We only ended up going through the first book of it, though, because people, I know, the kind of, it waned the kind of interest in it. And I find that with a couple of the book clubs I've done, that people kind of start off really into it and then they kind of don't. But I'm going to go back to it and do more, because Spud's rereading it at the minute. So we'll probably talk about it on the Tommy and Spud Talk About podcast. It's brilliant, and it's probably, if you're reading it now, it'll kind of come across a bit dated or as if all the ideas have been taken from other things. And it's essentially because everyone stole from it. Like, The Matrix has an awful lot from it, any number of TV shows, any number of comics. And it's kind of, it'll be interesting because there's no TV show coming out about it. But you see Grant Morrison saying it's not going to be a direct adaptation of the thing. It's going to be what the Invisibles would be if it kind of emerged from idea space right now. So I'm really looking forward to that. But it's worth your while. There's some brilliant ideas in it. It's the thing that it's the hyper sigil. It's the thing that put the hyper sigil on the map. And I have a couple of videos on hyper sigils and stuff like that. So that's kind of it. I'll put all of these books in the show description, links to them and stuff. They'll probably be affiliate links, which just basically means you buy them for the same price you always would, and I get like 10 cent or something if you do. Other books, I suppose there's plenty that you could go down. Like the Satanic Bible is always a good one if you're coming from a kind of strict Christian background. Necronomicon is fun. I got it to work fairly well. More of Pete Carroll's books. Phil Hine is always good. Ramsey Jukes is always worth your time. There's plenty. The Dean Radin book, Real Magic, is very good, kind of primer as well. There's loads of decent books. Out of all of them that I've just suggested, the one I would suggest that you get the most, the one that'll really get you into magic and into that magic mode and that kind of feeling and that wanting to do stuff and feeling that the world is very enchanted, is the KLF book. So that's out of all of them is the one that I would recommend you get if you're only going to get one. Or if you haven't read it before, then I would definitely say read it. So, good people of the internet, that is some suggestions of books that I think you should read. So in the comments below, can you please give me some suggestions of books? Because I love buying books. It's my absolute addiction, and I'm just not sorry for it anymore, and I'm just going to indulge it. So if you can recommend me some books, magic, comics, anything you want, I will be very grateful. So until next time, be well.